Thank you for joining us today for our exclusive interview with Joe Terranova and David Albright. Joining us on the call today is Craig Bolanos, founder and CEO of Wealth Management Group. Craig, the call is yours.
Well, thank you, Lisa, and to everybody across the country. I appreciate you dialing into our weekly conference call. And this morning, we join each other in nothing short of anticipation, waiting for the House of Representatives to vote on that historic $2 trillion stimulus package that was passed by the Senate earlier this week, clearing the way for the president to sign it while we as the American public and the economy fight what has been the devastating spread of COVID-19. Now, the legislation stands as the largest emergency aid package in U.S. history. It's a massive financial injection into an economy that we all know is struggling, provisions aimed at helping the American workers, small businesses, and industries. And I'm very excited for a WMG exclusive today. Joining us on the phone, Joe Terranova and Dave Albright. Joe Terranova is the chief market strategist for Virtus Investment Partners, a CNBC Ensemble member. In fact, I think everybody will recognize his name as he has been in and off of my TV screen pretty much every day for the past month, and we're thrilled to have Joe joining us. And also we have Dave Albright, president, chief investment officer of New Fleet Asset Management. And Dave is in the trenches running multi-sector fixed income strategies for both open and closed-end funds that carry five-star ratings from Morningstar. Joe, Dave, thank you both for taking time out of your busy schedule, especially during trading hours, to speak with our families about this very dynamic situation. And I thought would be fun and a little bit different is to let the two of you take over the call, banter back and forth about what you're seeing, where we are, where some of the opportunities might be, some of the risks, and then I'll join back in later to close this out. So with that, Joe, Dave, I turn the call over to you this morning.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to speak with everyone this morning. Dave, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Joe. Very good.
Dave, if you would allow me to, I think I'll just begin with kind of some opening remarks on the capital markets overall, and then we'll go specifically to some of the credit conditions that exist that's so important right now to this recovery process. So, ladies and gentlemen, obviously we are enduring something very historic in its nature. I've categorized it a crisis of preservation. It's unique in its circumstances because it's very difficult for the investment community to model the ultimate outcome. There are a lot of things that we're measuring right now to give us some form of guidance when there'll be a resolution and an unlocking of a frozen economy. And that's the critical result of this biological crisis, is that there was a need to freeze the economy and create what I would call a still society. Now, when you create a still society, you freeze economic activity, you create a crisis of preservation. Folks walking the streets that are the local barber or restaurant worker, they're worried for their next day, not so much what their future is going to be like. They're just worried about getting by. In that environment, it's very important to understand you need a construct, a mosaic of coordination to provide what I would call a temporary safety net to the capital markets and to mainstream. And we're in the middle of that process. But I think that's important for everyone on this call to understand that we're in the middle of that process. There's work that still needs to be done in that process. There's components of that process that have been very critical and strong. I'm going to speak to Dave about one area of that, and that is the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve has provided a tremendous amount of liquidity to the asset markets, but more importantly, what they've done for corporate America and the consumer is they've extended liquidity and a very fertile private sector borrowing cost for many, many years to come. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to keep in mind, while this 30-day sell-off in its nature correlates to the sell-off that we witnessed in 1929, it is a distinctly different environment. It is a misrepresentation for those to suggest that the Great Depression of 1929 is what something economically we could be facing now. And here's the difference why. In 1929, the capital market significant decline preceded a very austere fiscal and monetary policy environment. You did not have an accommodative Federal Reserve. 180 degrees different in perspective today you have a Federal Reserve that's incredibly accommodated, much different of an environment. So the fertile environment they're nurturing is going to allow for a capital markets that I'll use the analogy as a patient that's gone into the ICU. That capital market patient by no means is going to die. It's going to be a process over time of much needed recovery. The recovery is needed on the monetary policy front. You're getting that. Fiscal policymakers are voting today on a fiscal stimulus package that basically calculates to about 10% of GDP. I would argue fiscal policymakers are going to have to give the markets more. They're going to have to come back with probably closer to 15 to 20% of GDP. We need the price of oil to resolve itself. That's the Russians, the Saudi Arabia, and the U.S. collectively coming together in a coordinated effort to deal with not so much the oversupply concerns that we have in the market. The demand side will be resolved when we unlock this economic freeze. And lastly, from the healthcare perspective, we're looking towards Italy. I think Italy is the analog for the United States and for stewards of capital who are pricing risk to understand when potentially you'll get a flattening of the curve here in the United States. So the environment as I see it, I see diversification is being placed on sale. I see quality is being placed on sale once again. I can't emphasize to you enough, it's about the construct of your portfolio. It's not about where the FANG and S&P 500 is. It's about the diversification that the multi-asset approach presents to you in your portfolio. And we're fortunate to have someone who's very critical in that construct of a portfolio on the call with us today, David Albright, who clearly can talk about the taxable fixed income market and how that could lend diversification to your portfolio. So, Dave, I just wanted to welcome you in, and if you could maybe expand upon my thoughts and just give a few opening remarks, and then we'll kind of go back and forth for everyone on the call.
Sure. Thank you, Joe. Starting the year, I had a whiteboard, and I wrote down the risks of the market in my office, and one was the election, second was trade, third, geopolitical risks. Out of left field comes the coronavirus. Throw on top of that what Joe just mentioned, oil wars with Russia and Saudi Arabia. Nobody saw it coming. The market risks now have turned into a possible economic downturn for both the U.S. and globally. Monetary policy, will it be effective? Zero interest rates, can you cut rates anymore? And something nobody would have anticipated, a health risk with the virus. I equate this time to 2008, but it's very, very different, as Joe had mentioned, versus the Great Depression and any other time that we've seen in history. In 08, the financial system problem turned into an economic problem. Now we have a medical health problem turning into an economic problem that swiftly affected the financial markets. In 4 weeks, we went from a fixed income market that was sound technically to one of the best environments we've seen to one of the quickest sell-offs we've seen in history. Typically what happens, you know, somebody asked me why bonds, those are always safe. When things move this swiftly and we have a flight to quality, people rush to quality assets, correlations of all assets tend to go together. So both bonds, stocks, risk assets. And that's what we saw. They tend to be short, and now the market is creating some of the best opportunities I've seen as an investment manager in my life, in my history in the market of 27 years. Markets are functioning. There's issuance coming, so people are still accessing the capital markets. Just to mention a few, UPS, MetLife, Exxon, Pepsi, Verizon all came record issuance because of low rates, and those people need to refinance. Liquidity is lower, but things are trading. And as Joe had mentioned, the Fed and the central banks stepped in very, very aggressively, swiftly, and robustly on the monetary side, putting in place what I consider to be a bazooka bigger than what they did in 08. But I agree with Joe. You probably see more from them. On the fiscal side, you know, this usually takes quite a bit of time. We've already passed through the Senate the $2 trillion package, likely to be approved by the House today, and that we'll have to have more and incremental steps coming by the government. One good thing versus 08 is banks are much better capitalized or in a much better position because of regulation than they were in 08 to weather this storm. So right now we're seeing some of the best valuations that we've seen. Current levels are great. You know, the outlook for returns are so much better than just 4 weeks ago when people were complaining about income and how low rates were. Well, we've seen valuations move quite a bit, and now we have plenty of liquidity to take advantage of this.
So, Dave, if you could talk a little bit about the liquidity that the Federal Reserve's providing to the capital markets. There's been a significant improvement in the conditions for the municipal bond market, for the conditions in the investment grade market, the mortgage market, but not so much the high yield market. Can you kind of touch upon each of those four individual constructs?
Yeah, well, obviously they've provided liquidity to the investment grade market was one of the areas that they've chosen, and we've seen that come back very nicely, especially the high quality assets within the investment grade market. Next, the municipal market. And I literally got a note from my muni manager. I'll read it to you because I think it's. He said, "I'm basically speechless right now." He's like, "What a difference 5 days can make. The magnitude of a yield change over the past week really happens in the course of the year. It happened in 3 days. Muni yields are actually lower than they were back in January 1st of 2020. It's insane. So you saw extreme selling, panic, people running to the sidelines, and now it's always snapped back with the support from the Federal Reserve. So, the markets are doing what they should. These are times when you have to take a deep breath and let markets work themselves out, and then when they present opportunity. Joe, you had mentioned the mortgage market. The Fed is buying agency mortgage backs. They bought back, they targeted $200 billion. They opened the door to buy back more. I think they already bought $125 billion, so they're stabilizing the mortgage market. Then lastly, the asset-backed security market. They're doing what they did back in 08 called TALC. The one thing that I hope happens and I think will happen is this will move to the private label areas, non-bank entities, which is important to stabilize the overall market. But we've seen the Fed do the right thing, act swiftly, act robustly, provide a big degree of security to the industry, to me as a fixed income investor. And, in our portfolios, we've done the up in quality trades, so we're benefiting from all the support we're seeing from the Federal Reserve. And throw on top of it, other central banks are also acting, the ECB, the BOJ, just to mention a few.
Dave, how's concerned you might be about the high yield market, specifically as it relates to energy and the continued deterioration of the price of oil?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Was there a question?
Actually, yes. Craig Bolanos. Dave, a lot of our clients are wondering, can you explain the mechanism that caused all of those high-quality asset-backed corporate and high-quality municipal bonds to sell off during that crazy 3 to 5 day period?
Yeah, exactly. And Joe, that'll answer your question, but absolutely, that's an excellent question. And me and Joe had just talked about that, before the call. Basically, when markets break down, people sell not what they should sell, but what they can sell. And typically what they can sell is the most liquid, high-quality assets, okay? If it's a mutual fund seeing redemptions, if it's an individual wanting to liquefy their portfolio, you don't want to sell the most risky thing in your portfolio that's down 20 points that will never come back. What you'll do is you'll sell what you think you can sell, which is typically the most high-quality assets. You'll liquefy those, and they typically feel the most pain on the way down, but are usually the quickest to snap back. We've already seen that in the muni market. We've seen it in the corporate bond market. We had done an up in quality trade in our portfolio over the last 18 months just based on where values were. We weren't getting paid enough to be in certain asset classes. So we felt pain on the way down, and we're feeling the snapback come back very quickly. But it's the higher quality assets which people can sell versus what they want to sell.
Okay. Dave, maybe we could go back and just talk real quick about high yield and oil relative to my question. How concerned should we be in 2020, or is it more a 2021 event?
Well, obviously, you've seen oil prices go substantially below what we saw in 2016. Oil prices have moved down. Of the high yield space, the energy market was off about 44%. Now it's off about 41%, so some companies are gaining a little. Are coming back slightly. A lot of those companies are levered to the oil price. When oil falls significantly below $40 a barrel, you start to see downgrades. When it stays there for a prolonged period of time, then you start to see defaults. We'll clean out the bottom, the over-levered guys that tried to bet on natural gas as a way to diversify their portfolio, which didn't work. And we'll weed out the bottom, bottom names, and then there'll be great opportunities in the top names. Now, that will work itself out from a supply-demand, on a supply-demand basis with, OPEC working together with, Shell producers. But we're weeding through what we think are the best companies that have, will be around for the long term, some of the large integrated oil companies, some of the pipelines, and we're taking this as an opportunity. We are dramatically underweight to the energy segment because it is extremely volatile and very difficult to predict where the price of oil goes.
Any questions?
So, Joe, to you, sometimes the most obvious clue is deceptive for us as investors. But as you look forward to the future, I ask you, what do you believe are going to be the sectors or industries that are going to be the most transformed from the plot that is COVID-19?
Well, I think first and foremost, the healthcare industry is going to be given a much needed catalyst from this, and a little more in the way of loosening of regulations to do some of the measures that we need going forward to understandably protect our society from future pandemics. So I think healthcare certainly stands out from a sector standpoint. I just think coming into this, technology was the U.S. economy, and coming out on the other side, not only will it once again be the U.S. economy, but its excellence will come forth even more with more visibility and reward investors that will be allocated towards the sector. Consumers came into this very strong, again, because the Federal Reserve, in my estimation, will not be raising interest rates until the price of the S&P is back to at or near or even above the all-time highs that we enjoyed just a month ago. So I think consumers are blessed in that environment as well. So I think it's the consumer. I think it's healthcare. I think it's the financials where the opportunity, visibility, and the premium should be paid.
Yeah, and in fixed income, the areas have gotten hit very, very hard. Are anything leisure, anything travel-related, gaming, hotels, movie theaters, cruise lines, airlines, restaurants, retail, REITs. And then you have to ask yourself, which industries will get bailed out? So you have to wait and see that on that front. And then what are going to be permanent changes in consumer behavior? Joe and myself have talked about this many times. Are you going to run out once this is once they get a vaccine and we see something peak? Are you going to run out and want to go to a sporting event? Are you going to want to go to a movie theater? Are you going to want to go out to dinner? These are things that we really have to think about hard. And what will be the future implications? Another thing that I was talking to Joe about that I thought was very important is that we've seen a lot of companies aggressively lever their balance sheets. So we heard a lot of this. They've got to the lowest point of investment grade, over-levered balance sheets. Will they take a decision now? Will they make a decision in the future that they won't leverage themselves so much to get into a predicament like we're seeing with Ford, General Motors, Expedia, a lot of the big companies that just moved down into the below investment grade realm, Sprint, Heinz Kraft? Will they really rethink taking on too much leverage in the future?
I think if I could add upon that, it's going to be very important going forward for corporations to understand having a pristine balance sheet. So obviously the conduct of capital allocation to the shareholder in form of buying back stocks or dividends, that's not going to be a priority on the list of things that corporations are going to be doing. Corporations are going to be focusing on their balance sheet. What does it look like? Low debt levels. And I think it's important to identify the companies in that environment that are going to achieve excellence in that exercise.
And Joe, that's a fantastic point. So could either of you talk, and Dave in particular as a credit manager, you do stress test the balance sheets. What should our investors know about the financial health of the largest companies operating within the S&P 500 today?
I would just say that, we have to take a hard look at, what we just mentioned, what will happen with consumer behavior, what will balance sheets look like, what type of liquidity do they have? You know, what type of cash flow generation characteristics based on what's going on? Are there bank lines in place that they can access capital? What's their product life cycle? You know, if you have a 5-year loan and your product life cycle is 3 years, you're probably not that's probably not a good investment. And when does your debt come due, and are you able to refinance it? What does your product look like? We look at a variety of things. We're going through and we stress test the portfolio every day. You know, now because things are under pressure, we are starting to nibble. So there's a lot of things that look very attractive. Just in the last few days, we bought very well-established companies that we think will be, you know, definitely around in the future. CVS, Taco Bell, Dunkin' Donuts, J.P. Morgan, State Street Bank. We bought eBay. All very, very good companies that just 4 weeks ago looked outrageously expensive, but now are extremely attractive as an investor. And really, you know, as a portfolio manager, you know, we've always looked at a few things that are critical to our investors: focusing on quality, having ample liquidity, being diversified, looking through and looking where the buying opportunities come to us, like we just bought and started to nibble just this week.
And in particular, Dave, everybody on this call has investments in your multi-sector fixed income. Can you comment briefly of the advantage you have versus other managers who don't have a multi-sector mandate? Why is this the type of environment that should allow you to thrive when we come out of this on the backside?
Yeah, because we always have liquidity embedded in the portfolio. If I'm in a dedicated strategy, if I'm in a high-yield fund, a dedicated bank loan fund, I may have to sell an asset that's down 5 points to buy an asset that I like down 30 points. That typically is a loser's game. You know, I have assets. We have 11% in what we call liquidity right now in the portfolio. If you look at cash, you look at treasuries, and you look at agency mortgage-backed securities, all, you know, two of them which are government guaranteed, we can sell those assets and then swap into things that have gotten very, very cheap. Investment-grade corporate bonds, munis. We had actually played the muni market. We had bought the one of the indexed ETFs. We bought it at a 28% discount in some of our accounts. In the Pacific Mutual Fund, you're talking about a 20% discount, and now we're selling it. It's only down now. The discount is 3%, so it's up about 7 to 8 points. So tactical trades, having the liquidity within the portfolio. You need a diversified portfolio. You want to have a relative value investing type strategy, and you want somebody who's been doing it for 3 decades. I think it's important to note that, you know, I've been, you know, as a portfolio manager, we've been through many cycles, but I was around in 1994, which was 7 rate increases, the Mexican peso devaluation, the end of the high-yield debacle, and we came through that. Then there was 1998, long-term capital. You know, these geniuses from MIT blew up their portfolios. 2002, the telecom debacle, Enron, WorldCom, Adelphia. 2008, the subprime mortgage crisis, we made it through that. 2011, the downgrade of the U.S. debt, and then the European debt crisis. 2016, the oil shock, and then most recently, 2018, when the Fed and the Bank of Europe, the ECB, were tightening liquidity and made a mistake. So I've been through many cycles. I've seen it before. Typically, these type of cycles, when there's a sell-off in quality assets, present the best opportunities to investors. And as long as you're disciplined, you know, you stay up in quality, you're diversified, and have plenty of liquidity in your portfolio, you're able to benefit in times like these.
No, Dave, I think those are words of wisdom. And Joe, I want to give you just one additional opportunity, if you don't mind. I mean, not only do you have a leadership position as the chief market strategist for Virtus Investment Partners, but you have a media platform through all of your TV time to reach out and touch investors all across this nation. And I would love if you would close us out by sharing your words of wisdom to investors that are sprinting towards, or those investors that are already retired today.
Well, what I've tried to do is very calmly emphasize to everyone that we had a very strong foundation coming into this economically. We had the recreation of the American economy in a capacity that we have not seen since the 1950s, and it became an asset-light, technology-oriented economy. We have energy independence, and we have a remarkably strong consumer who now enjoys an 8% savings rate that's double what it was just 12 years ago in the last crisis. So you take that, you combine the mosaic of coordination that we're in the process of being blessed with, and I think that awaiting some form of resolution to this healthcare crisis, we will, on the other side of this, prosper, and we will certainly endure through this moment. And I remain optimistic that, as I said before, a patient that's in the ICU will recover very well, and we'll be able to look back upon this and learn many lessons so that it doesn't really hinder us in the capacity that it has over the last month again.
I would just close with one last thing, that the amount of resources and the eyes tackling this on a global basis, you know, this will be behind us in the coming quarters, and we'll look back at this as one of the greatest opportunities of a lifetime.
No, I think that makes an awful lot of sense. So to Joe and Dave, thank you very much for the extension of your time this morning. We appreciate the longstanding partnerships we've had with both of your investment platforms. To all of the callers listening in today that are a part of the Wealth Management Group family, thank you for letting us stay with you in the trenches to help you be excellent stewards of your family's retirement. We're here to continue to work towards helping everybody get retired, ensuring everybody stays retired. And if you have any questions, please follow up with your dedicated contacts. Lisa, I'll let you close out the call at this time.
Thank you, Craig. The opinions voiced on this call are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. The economic forecasts set forth may not develop as predicted. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Virtus Investment Partners Incorporated and New Fleet Asset Management are not affiliated with Wealth Management Group or LPL Financial. Thank you.